AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Petrified Podcast. I am your host, Damon Martinez, here with my co-host,
Eric Lover.
Thank y'all so much for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed last week's episode of Weapons. We hope you enjoyed the movie as well. And I hope everybody's having a good week. And yeah, we're changing things up a little bit. We're doing franchises now, trying to change up the format of how we do things. And you went to go see Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, it was the 52nd anniversary of Texas Chainsaw Massacre being released. It was August 18th of 2025. So 52 years ago, way before you were even thought of.
Yeah, dude.
And I was just a twinkle and gleam in my dad's eyes. So literally, yeah.
Yeah, dude, I wanted to go see. I got busy, but I did rewatch, of course, the movie. And yeah, man, it's such a good franchise. Of course, it kind of wanes going down the line, but yeah, it was a huge horror impact for cinema and all that. I mean, if you haven't seen the Texas Chainsaw Massacre franchise, or at least the first one, I mean, if you're very new to horror, go check it out. It's probably one of the first kind of, like, I guess, slashers, one of the first ones to kind of introduce just, like, psychotic people. I mean, of course, you had Alfred Hitchcock doing, you know, Psycho and all that, but what changed with the horror franchise, it was like more bloody, more gory.
Yeah, it was more primitive in nature. It was very just raw film footage.
Yeah. Yeah, in 1973 is when they started, when Tobe Hooper and a group of young filmmakers and actors, they would produce a film that would pretty much change horror cinema. And, of course, they would face a lot of, you know, challenges and financial challenges, filming challenges. But, you know, when they got through it, I mean, they made a film that would become a cult classic and pretty much
on so many levels.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even straight-laced people. That was the funny thing that I realized about going to see the movie. There were people in there, like, we're in a very religious town. We're in Lubbock, Texas. And there's a lot of religion here in our town, and it's ingrained in almost every part. And the fact that multiple people were, like, business professionals.
Oh, yeah.
Full families of people. Like, and these were like church people. And I was sitting next to them. And I'm just like, really? But like, they came out because, you know, obviously, like, one of the financial benefactors for the producing of the movie was on staff at Texas Tech at the time.
Oh,
he
did
actually invest his money in to help make the movie. So
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I think, you know, due to the fact that that was going down that way, you know, it had a lot of support from even rural areas that were very Christian. And
yeah, well, I mean, that's, you know, because that's what the movie kind of focuses on, is these rural backwoods people that have gone psychotic and pretty much are just, like, killing people. So, yeah, I mean, you have that, you know, mixed with, you know, small towns, you know, southern towns, or, you know, pretty much just rural towns in general. I mean, it connects with them in a different way, which was, I mean, that's what was pretty cool about it at the time. And knowing that you had an actual, you know, there's a lot of Texas pride when it comes to Texans. So when you have a director who's from Texas making a movie, you know, a lot of the actors who were from Texas, they wanted part of it. You know, they were up and coming actors. They wanted to, you know, they were, you know, looking for jobs and stuff like that. So when they heard that Tobe Hooper, a Texan, was making a film here in Texas, they're like, yeah, I'm all over that. Because if you watch the 2000, you know, documentary, you know, 25 years later, it, you know, they talk about how, you know, they would fly in people to make movies based, you know, in Texas and stuff like that. So when you have somebody from here doing
it. Yeah, when it was homegrown, it was.
Oh, yeah, they were just, you know, and making a movie that's so guerrilla, it was just different for the time. Of course, none of them were expecting, you know, huge success from it, but they saw something there, obviously, or else they wouldn't have done it. Of course, a paycheck, but something special. Even though some of them didn't get paid.
Yeah, if you watch any of like the future documentaries that come down the pike, definitely you're going to hear about the pay differential and the fact that certain people, you know, never got over that.
My thing is, who was it? The set designer, he was really like impressed with like, you know, just the way they were doing things. I understand he was probably like very experienced with filmmaking and stuff like that with other producers and directors and stuff like that. Robert Burns, set pieces were amazing. I mean, they did a lot of stuff to kind of, you know, create some of the stuff, you know, going to farms, finding dead animals, going to people who did, you know, taxidermy and stuff like that. So he was very, you know, excited about all that stuff. But he also, at the same time, there was, like, some things in it that he was like, oh, I washed my hands of that. We didn't do that. And then, you know, they would cut to somebody else, and he's like, no, we did that. Like, that's how we did this and stuff like that. He's like, no, we, you know, I don't know about any of that. So it's like he wanted to be part of it, but he didn't want to be part of it. It was very contradictory.
Yeah, he didn't want, like, his name affiliated. Like, he wanted to be, like more highbrow.
I think it was, like, the good stuff was me, but the... And the stuff, like the inexperienced stuff, that was them. Yeah. But it's like, dude, it's either
the armadillo in the road, that was just, you know, the opening sequence, that was just pure.
Well, he wanted that dead horse.
Yeah.
And Tobe Hooper didn't want, like, a domesticated animal because it would look. But I think that would have been perfect. Perfect shot. I mean, dude, you're already going pretty gruesome, but, I mean, you know.
But, yeah, but when you think about it, like, okay, anywhere in the South is kind of has the affiliation with the horse. Like, I mean, you know, you got the cowboys through New Mexico,
yeah,
Texas, everything. Think about our state animal. I mean, in honesty, like, you can't get much more Texan than a damn armadillo.
That's, yeah, true.
Like, I mean, it's just the way that it is. And, you know, if you are, you know, appealing to that demographic, yeah, an armadillo is the way to go.
Oh, so. Yeah. Yeah, this movie was, it still is, holds up today. I mean, even with the sequels, it still holds up today. I mean, especially for the time that was going around, you had a lot of serial killers coming out. You had a lot of it's just stuff going on in the country. So
you had Vietnam War.
Yeah, yeah, the Vietnam War.
Vietnam War was going on, and you know, Tobe Hooper kind of, you know, draws that line that he's saying that, you know, he got sort of the inspiration for the movie was, you know, being able to. Vietnam was the first war that was ever televised.
Yeah.
That you could sit down with your family and eat your dinner at night and, you know, watch the war.
Yeah.
And so that kind of drew into the fact of where he got his inspiration that obviously this movie was, if you look at Leatherface, you know, you can obviously tell that this is, a lot of it comes from, you know, Ed Gein.
Yeah.
Who was a serial killer in Wisconsin, in Plainfield, Wisconsin. And so you can really tell that he really drew a lot from that story. And so, yeah, with Vietnam being on the television, and that was a great thing about this movie is that, you know, a lot of people don't give it credit, but he marketed it as being a real story. Just as a marketing kid, he was like, you know, the annals of history and, you know, these four kids, you know, five kids, like, end up, you know, on the road and, you know, run into this group of cannibals. And, yeah, people, like, looked at it as, you know, oh, my gosh, this is a real story out of Texas.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. It was kind of just, like, a nod to Ed Gein.
Yeah, pretty much, yes. Some of the stuff that was going on, you know, up in Wisconsin and all that crazy stuff, all that grave robbing and wearing his mom's skin and killing two people and gutting them, like, you know.
Even the family dynamic. If you watch the movie, yeah, too, like, yeah. You know. You know, Ed Gein, if you're not familiar with the story, he essentially was a serial killer from Wisconsin, and his father was very oppressive and his mother was very religious.
Yeah.
And she basically tainted sex. She was anything sexual.
Pretty much like women were like the demons.
Oh,
like,
women were demons. Like sex for procreation.
That's it.
Was horrible enough.
Yeah.
Like it was horrible. It was displayed as horrible.
Yeah. It should be a laboring like task.
But
it should
sex not for, be, pleasure? Yeah, never, for pleasure? Never. 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 And so he was raised that way. So he was very respectful of his mother.
Yeah.
Whereas his brother was like, man, I'm not falling for this.
Yeah, he got out of there.
And... yeah, he hit the bricks, you know, later to come back and, you know, die. Then mother died, and Ed basically turned his entire house into, well, areas of the house.
Yeah.
Into a shrine for his deceased mother.
Yeah, he kept her in the house and talked to her, would have conversations. I mean, but that's the thing is, like, what's crazy is that, like, dude, you broke your son psychologically so bad that now he's just keeping you in this house. And, I mean, he ends up killing two women. So I wouldn't say, like, serial killer, but he, you know, ended up killing.
Yeah, he was definitely, you know, he was robbing graves. He was messing with bodies. He was
making furniture.
Making furniture, lampshades. When they actually raided his house, the doorbell was a woman's nipple and areola.
That's wild.
Was the doorbell. So he actually made a woman's suit out of woman's skin.
Yeah, kind
of
like Buffalo Bill and Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah. So, and the funny part that I found about this was, you know, when we first did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you know, here about a year ago.
Yeah. One of our unreleased episodes. Yeah.
One of the episodes that we didn't release, we were just spitballing doing the podcast.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And we were talking about this movie. And the most hilarious part about the whole situation is, so we always talk about at the end of the movie, there's this big, hefty truck driver.
Oh, yeah.
The only African-American movie in the entire movie.
Yeah.
So he's in the movie, and he pulls up, and, you know, she's fleeing. She's trying to get away from Leatherface. Leatherface is messing it up. Well, that man's name is actually Ed Gwynn. And I was like, are you serious? And I didn't realize it until I went to go see the movie this past week. And I'm like, Ed Gwynn? Who the hell's Ed Gwynn? And then I'm like,
Dude, that's wild.
And the craziest part about it was, like, I was like, wow, this is crazy, because you and I were talking about that. That was, a point we came up with. And then if you watch part two, he's one of the chili chefs.
Oh, is he? I didn't even notice.
He's one of the chili chefs. I had no idea. I was watching part two, and I'm like, is that the dude from the first one? And so, like, I literally pulled it up, and sure enough, Ed Gwynn is like an impromptu chili chef in part two.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. See, that's just crazy stuff, man. But yeah, I mean, with the first one, we're not going to go deep because we're going to go through the whole franchise. It changed because, you know, that's when actually the whole film industry, horror-wise, was starting to change. You had 1972 with Last House on the Left. You know, you had just people, like, showing the horror of, like, people. You know, you went from having aliens, monsters, Eastern European monsters, stuff like that, to going to, like,
your next-door neighbor.
Yeah, your next-door neighbor, somebody who you could be walking by down the street, you know, and then now it puts you, like, oh, well, that's the scary part. It's like, oh, could it be him? Could it be her? And that was good about it. And with Texas Chainsaw, it's like, hey, man, maybe there's some people living out, you know, in the countryside that are, you know, psychotic. They're luring you to their house or stuff like that and killing you and eating you and making Sawyer sausage.
Well, yeah. And then the fact also, you know, you had the whole hitchhiker hysteria.
Oh, and that too, yeah.
Where everybody was like, you know, anybody who was hitchhiking, like, oh, you're going to end up dead. Like, some guy in a semi is going to pick you up and you're going to end up, you know, like, I don't know, rearview mirror ornament. And it's like, yeah, they really, like, those things were there and they were scary. And here in Texas, you have a lot of areas between your major metropolitan areas.
Yeah.
That are, you know, they're undiscovered. I mean, the populations maybe even to today.
Oh, yeah.
You go places, there's 6,000 people in a town.
Yeah.
And you've got to stop here and maybe get gas, maybe, you know, get something to eat.
Oh, heck, where I used to live, I think it was only a population of, like, maybe 400.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's a small, which now it's probably, like, up to 6, almost 7. But, yeah, I mean, there's small towns, man. You stop by and you're like, oh, I'm just going to get gas. And next thing you know, you're in somebody's freaking burger.
Exactly. Your Dame Chops.
Yeah, dude. But Leatherface itself, the character, I mean, it's just, you know, a confused, you know, deranged person, you know, is probably not all there, just killing people. And what's crazy, I saw like another video about people talking about Leatherface and, you know, how, you know, he's actually the innocent one, you know, because he was scared, you know, because people were coming in. They didn't know where they were coming from.
Yeah, so he's an agoraphobe. He stays in his house. He doesn't come outside.
So it was like, yeah, he's the only problem was like, they were like, oh, he's the good guy, this and that. Like, no, he still killed him. Like, he still disposed of them. Like, he still chopped them up, and they probably threw him in, like, a freaking brisket or something like that. Like, he's still a crazy person because that's what they are, the Sawyers.
He's in that big roaster at the gas station. That's all there is to it.
So, yeah, like, you know, he's still, he was scared. He was just, like, pretty much just defending his house. And, you know, all these people are coming out of nowhere. And
yeah, he's the baby Huey of the situation. Yeah, he's pretty much. He's an agoraphobe. He probably was underneath the thumb of his grandmother.
Yeah.
Because there's, technically, in the Sawyer family, there's no other reference of any other women.
Yeah, with the first movie,
there's no reference.
Whatsoever.
So he probably only knew his grandmother.
Yeah.
And so he was probably raised by her. She probably thought, because he's in the house, okay, like, no, they're cooking barbecue. But he's in the house basically preparing the house. He's keeping the house up.
Yeah.
That's what Leatherface does. That's his job. He's an agoraphobe. Yeah, he doesn't go out.
Yeah, his brother's job is to kind of lure people, kind of, you know, go get.
He's a nomad.
Yeah,
Yeah.
You know. And then, of course, you have, you know, the father who's just at the gas station tending and, you know, earning the bread, but at the same time kind of seeing who his brother or who the brother, Nubbins, is luring in, and that's how he gets them. And then they cook you up, and then you eat it. And then you're, Franklin had the sausage dangling out of his mouth. And what you rewatch, and you're like, oh, dude, that's probably like somebody's.
Yeah. It's probably somebody's pinky finger.
He's not eating it. But Gunnar Hansen, the original Leatherface, how he came up with the character and the way he was, he went to a state school for special needs kids. Because they don't use very polite words in the...
Because you could definitely do that back in the 70s.
Dude, yeah, you could just do whatever you want.
You just show up at the state school. Hey, I kind of want to observe how the special ed kids get down. And that's what they did.
Yeah, that's what they did. The special needs people, they don't say that in the documentary, but that's what it... You know, it's for people who, you know, aren't all there. They're, you know, either psychotic in some sort of way, or their, you know, their families gave up on them because they were just special needs. That's usually what happened.
They were too much for our family to take care of.
Unfortunately, that's what happened. So he pretty much just walked the grounds of the school and would observe them, and pretty much he was like, well, you know, after 2 days, I walked around like one of them, and I pretty much thought like, okay, these people don't even know if I'm just somebody acting or if I'm actually a person who's supposed to be here, which is a wild way to like act, but to kind of get into it. But I mean, he did it, and that's how he came up with, you know, Leatherface. And then he would never appear as Leatherface again until like the worst, probably one of the worst ones later down the line. But yeah, I mean, he wasn't supposed to be Leatherface. They had another guy cast. That guy got drunk in a hotel, wouldn't leave, and so he ended up getting the part. So there you go. And he was the OG.
He happened into it,
Yeah, he was the OG Leatherface, and he, you know, that movie would, you know, 32 days of filming, and in the heat, and all the rotted dead animals.
Yeah, all the roadkill and everything that the stage had, you know, the crew found.
Dude.
They kept in there, and it was, you know, summertime in flipping Texas.
And then they would, you know, they had all these dead dogs because they would try to embalm them to keep them fresh for the scene, some of the shots, even though they were not in the scene, just for the background. And they were like, dude, this is stinking up the house. So they piled them out, all the dead animals in the front yard.
Well, that, and then, you know, in the original, in part one, you had that chicken in the cage.
Oh, yeah.
And dude, you know, chickens, I mean, you know chickens better than I know chickens. But chickens are poop machines. If y'all ain't never had a chicken.
Dude, if you had like just a regular like parakeet or parrot.
Doves, everything like defecates continuously. But chicken.
Especially under stress.
Hot, wet chicken poop inside of like a canary cage.
Yeah. And then you have like all these bodies. You have obviously the cast on camera with the dinner scene. You have, of course, Sally. And then Nubbins and Leatherface and the dad. But
and
then
nobody was showering.
Yeah, and then you had the original, I mean, you had the cast and crew, or the crew filming everything. So you got like what, to maybe 20 plus bodies in one house.
Yeah, and it's only like 800 square feet.
Yeah, no central AC, just a fan maybe.
And the windows are covered.
Yeah, to make the, you know,
to give it the atmosphere. Yeah, that it's either night. You know?
Yeah, so did all of that. And then, yeah, nobody showered because they didn't want to lose the look for each scene.
And you know Nubbins stank. Okay.
Dude.
You know, okay. Oh, like seriously, Nubbins and Franklin, you know there was some funk going on. Just saying.
Well, freaking Leatherface. Oh, my gosh, dude.
Well, yeah, because you got to realize he had the two shirts.
Yeah.
He had the collared shirt. And he was had wearing, the other shirt.
And he was wearing the suit. Yeah, he was wearing the suit. Oh, my gosh.
And he was wearing the apron.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that was some,
different smells
yeah.
going on. Yeah, dude. But, I mean, after that, they made it out, and they made a film. You know, they cut it in Tobe Hooper's living room, showed it around. And what's crazy is because they ran out of money towards the end, so they had to share off some of their shares. Yeah, of the production company, and unfortunately sold one to a mafia boss who they didn't even know. Well, they said it was known, but like they didn't know, mind you. They're young, you know, producers, filmmakers. So they're like trying anything to make money.
Absolutely. And besides that, I mean, you really come down to the fact that the mafia are, they have shell corporations.
Yeah.
They have shell corporations and they've got, you know, businesses that are under their title. So, you know, it's not like you're like, you know, oh, this is the Soprano family. Oh, Jimmy Soprano's going to support. You know, it's not like that. It's, you know, it's, oh, hey, you know, T&S Holdings wants to invest, you know, $40,000 in your movie for like a 50% split.
Yeah, and they were making all the money off of the movie.
Yeah.
And then so when they were like, hey, man, like, we're not getting any money from you, like, what's going on? So when they went to go audit them, they're like, oh, you can audit us if you want, but, you know, there's no books.
You got to sleep with the fishes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
so they came back to Texas, and because it was from, I think it was in New York, if I remember correctly.
New York or Jersey.
Yeah. Around one of the two. Yeah. And so they came back and they sued them, and they found, you know, that they were pretty much just collecting money and not, you know, giving it to paying the people that needed to be paid. I think Leatherface, the guy who played him, only made $47.
Yeah, Franklin made what, like $300 or something like that?
He made $200-something, something like that.
Because they got an initial payout, and then they got residuals over time, like, you know, like all performers kind of do.
Yeah, but nobody was getting anything.
No one was getting union wages. You'll hear about those, you know, those SAG union wages.
Yes, with part two, where, you know, now you have a bigger production, you have, you know, more money behind it. You have millions now. You don't have $1,000 or something, or $60,000 of a budget. Now they have, you know, a good, you know, what, like $9 million now, $9.5 million backing you up. But the problem is with the big corporation, with Canon Films, they want to control everything. And that's the kind of price, I guess, you pay. Well, if you have a bad, you know, people looking over your shoulder all the time. So, you know, obviously after 10 years, a sequel was warranted now. Now you see the cult classic, you know, now it's a cult classic. People love Texas Chainsaw Massacre, so now it's time for a sequel.
Well, here's something that I found that's hilarious, to take it back just one step. Do you know that this movie played for 117 consecutive weeks in the movie theater?
Really?
107. Now, no, 52 weeks in a year. That's over 2 years. That's 2 years and some pocket change.
Well, yeah, because they had a lot of battle with it being banned overseas. Yeah. So now you had to kind of like – so, yeah, I can imagine it being 2 years. Yeah.
But 2 years, I mean, that's like 2 years, 3 months.
Yeah.
Picture like, I don't know, Wicked coming out and still being in the theater 2 years from now.
I think it still is in the theater.
No, that's part two coming up.
Part two is coming up.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's a long run.
Yeah.
So you got to think, the studio probably made money hand over fist on this beast. So yeah,
and that's probably why it's stayed.
Oh, that's probably
in so long.
That's probably why they were like, "Hey, absolutely." Yeah, it's got like this shock value. They marketed it properly. It had this whole, you know, real life true crime story scenario. Absolutely. So they just kept with it. So, yeah.
There was a lot of blood. Not a lot of blood, but it was just, it was very, again, going back to like Psycho, like Alfred Hitchcock, you saw the stab motion, but you never saw puncture wounds. You never saw anything like that.
No, you saw blood in the water going down the drain, and that was it.
That was pretty much it. Whereas now you're seeing somebody actually chainsaw somebody up or cut somebody's head off. And of course, it's filmed in a way where you don't obviously see it, but it's you're still getting like the most gruesome of deaths.
I don't know. You still see Franklin, okay? Franklin still caught it on screen.
Yeah, he did catch it on screen. When you saw the blood splatter, now that was what was different. Now you're seeing the gruesomeness of it. You're not just seeing the murder happen, you know, in a way that you know you don't see the act, but now you're seeing the act and you know all of it. And that was what was changing about the horror films. And then, of course, again, 10 years later, you get the second one. You get an actual kind of company, you know, backing you up, but at the same time, it's holding your artistic views. So Tobe Hooper comes back to direct this one. But again, they, you know, at the end of it, you cut out a lot of stuff that could have, you know, helped the film.
Well, you put a lot of stuff in it too, kind of to accommodate the
the
actors. The you know, obviously, it has Dennis Hopper in it.
Oh yeah, then that was what's different about this
one. So you're going through. Hopper, you've got paid talent in this one.
Yeah, except for Gunner, who is no longer Leatherface. He wanted a different pay. I don't know what he did between that 10 years between Leatherface and, you know, the first Texas Chainsaw to the second one. I don't know. I mean, for what he was asking for, you know, they can't pay, man. I mean, I don't know.
I think they could pay, but I mean, really, technically, if you can get, you've already shown that you have the money.
Yeah.
Because you're not going with, like, you know, I don't know, Skeet Ulrich as, you know, as your sheriff.
Yeah.
You know, you can go and you can get Dennis Hopper.
Yeah. So
if you can afford Dennis Hopper off the...
Or everything went to Dennis Hopper. I mean, you're getting a big name at the time.
Yeah. I mean, that was the pull of the second movie was the fact that Dennis Hopper was in it. Nobody really knew who Bill Moseley was. You know, he becomes Chop Top, but, you know, he wasn't really super paid talent.
Yeah. He was. They got, you know, they got Bill Moseley from a parody film, short film called Texas Chainsaw. Was it Manicure?
Manicure.
Where he plays the hitchhiker.
Yeah.
Tobe Hooper saw that and was like, dude, I want this guy. Because he wanted the original hitchhiker. Couldn't get him. And he was like, dude, well, here's his other brother. And, you know, you bring in Chop Top.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it's a great thing that you can play off of because it's a family.
Yeah.
So you can go cousins.
Yeah, they're a, you know, hillbilly family, and they're, you know, they
and,
have...
you know, kind of like, with that being said, that's kind of where the franchise went from this point. Like, they, you know... They
added a bunch of cousins.
They went on to, like, family trees, and, you know, they kept it Texas. You know, we got McConaughey.
Yeah,
you know, we got Renee Zellweger.
Oh,
no, she's not Texas, but, you know, it is what it is. We'll take what we can get. So, you know, but yeah, they really went on that family tree. I mean, second cousin twice removed. They went real country on that family tree.
They really did, yeah. With the second one, it was more comedic. You had more of a comedic element to
Absolutely.
It. Which is what he wanted. He wanted that comedic element, which is weird to have Dennis Hopper, who was mainly in serious roles. I saw, or not like serious, but like
he was definitely like Easy Rider. He definitely like had a comic appeal to the back end of his role, but yeah, he definitely like
the double chain, the Kimbo chainsaw.
Yeah, he was not your, you know, he was not your straight guy. He was not, you know, like the straight arrow guy.
Yeah,
he definitely had a comedic nature to him, but
yeah, but it, I mean, that's such a good movie, though. I mean, good in a way. I think, you know, it's not going to have that. You're never going to see the lost footage, I guess you could say, quote unquote. You're not going to have the director's cut because when they finished filming, Cannon got a hold of it first before it can even get to anybody else.
And they just cannibalized
it. Dude, they like chop-topped it up. They massacred that film, and the final product is what you get now. And, you know, Tobe Hooper was very upset. Like, dude, there was so much more. There was, you know, stuff in there that, you know, kind of went like without an ending or stuff like that.
Well, like what
that.
We were saying, he was making a franchise out of it.
Yeah.
And Cannon was like, we're going to make a payday out of it.
Yeah.
We financed the payday. We want a payday.
Yeah.
And they just, you know, they released what they wanted to release, and everything subsequently has kind of come down that same pike, you know.
Yeah.
Nothing's ever going to live up to the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
It won't ever. And so he gets out of, like, You know, I'm pretty sure at that point, you know, you've already been screwed over twice financially with these movies, but you do have your original and it's become a cult classic. So what more do you want? So, but of course, you know, you get, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre or Leatherface, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, which I had never seen. I've only seen the first two. And then of course the other ones that came after. Never saw the third one, never sought it out, so I couldn't tell you if I liked it or not. But watching the documentary, I can see that it wasn't the best.
No, best it was one. Not very well produced.
Well, and that's what I saw. The script looked terrible. You know, you had, what, this was, what, 90s?
Yeah, it was probably 93 out. Or 94. Early 90s, somewhere in that, you know, that demographic, in that age range.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, 1990, you know, Leatherface would come out.
Yeah.
And, yeah, this one was directed by Jeff Burr, who, again, you had New Line doing it. You know, this was the company backing it now. But they just wanted, at this point, you had horror icons becoming, you know, huge franchises now.
Yeah.
And it was starting to, you know, kind of wane on these fans. I mean, okay, so this one comes out. This is the third, you know, the third installment, but at this time you had Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child. Then you had Friday the 13th, Part 8, yeah. Jason Takes Manhattan. Then you had Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers. So now you're getting, it's pretty much like, okay, hey, these got sequels. This one needs another sequel. Even though there's no reason for it, we need to push one.
Well, see, and that's where I think they kind of erred from, in my opinion. This is where they kind of like blew the franchise apart, because what they did was they wanted to go with all these people. Okay. As you know, Halloween, Michael Myers.
Yeah.
Nightmare on Elm Street, Freddy Krueger. They're all individuals. They're not part of a family.
Yeah.
So the Sawyer family was always the Sawyer family.
Yeah.
Like Leatherface was an integral member of the family.
Yeah. He was the most iconic.
Yeah. So they took him and they extracted him out of everything. Freddy Krueger didn't have like a wife and kids and like all these people.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't that kind of a party. They were all like single solo killers.
Yeah.
So they took Leatherface out of the family and they removed him from the whole concept. And that's when I think they started to, just add things on that were just, you know.
Yeah.
They went way excessive on just making it weird, making him superhuman again, not making him fragile to an extent, you know, because obviously in the first part, he is very fragile and very weak.
Yeah, and then when this one, they told the director, like, hey, you're not to get in contact with Tobe Hooper. Like, you're not, you know, we're not
doing that Tobe Hooper.
Yeah, we're doing it different, this and that. But again, with the final product, you know, Jeff Burr wanted to go, like, back to the original one. He wanted the gore. He wanted to make it, you know, gruesome, gorilla. The problem was they wanted, like, a PG-13, like, rating. And you can't get that with this kind of film if you're going to show, like, blood and guts at the time. Now you probably get a PG rating and stuff like this. But, but yeah, like, they didn't want that. They just wanted, like, they just wanted the franchise. They wanted the face. They wanted Leatherface. They didn't want anything else. And so they got a hold of it, too. They cut it so bad that, like, Jeff Burr was like, dude, I don't want my name on this product. But they told him, like, hey, your name's already on here. You're the director. Your name's on here.
And you're taking the hit for it, too. Like, that's it. Like, this movie is, you know, we made it to where it sucks.
Yeah.
And it's going on your name.
Yeah.
Like, if it sucks, it's not on New Line. Yeah, and it sucks. It's on you.
Yeah. They chopped it up so bad, and they made the director look bad. Like, he was incompetent. Like, he couldn't do his job and came out with a bad Leatherface movie or Texas Chainsaw movie, and he ended up getting the shit out of the deal on that one, man. And then you get the fourth movie, which came out in 1997. I read online it was 94, but the documentary says 97. And I'm going to go with them because they were like...
I think it was 97.
It was like 97, yeah. And then you get the Return of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, or as you know, it's you know what today is, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Next Generation. That's the one where you get, you know, Matthew McConaughey, you get...
Zellweger.
Yeah, you get the Slaughter fan, or, you know... their last name Slaughter, and the original writer from the first movie, he's now part of it. Now he was only supposed to like be like somewhat in there.
Yeah, like a liaison kind of thing.
Yeah, but he ended up, you know, directing most of it, and it looked better. It looked, you know, better than the one previous to it, the prequel to that one.
Well, dude, Blue's Clues episode 7 looks better than that. I mean, it's not saying a lot.
Yeah, so yeah, you had Matthew McConaughey as Vilmer, and of course Renee Zellweger as Jenny, and then you had what's his name, Robert? Oh my gosh, I just had his name. Robert, was it Jax? I could be wrong, but he would be the new Leatherface. He would be the new one, and you're watching some of the behind the scenes, like you could, he was like, oh man, this mask is so, you could tell like it's a lot to do all that stuff and that freaking mask, and you got a thick, you know, leather mask on. But yeah, he would be the new Leatherface, and it did fairly decent. I mean, it didn't, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't a blockbuster by any means, but still, I mean, you're following up that last one. It, you know,
you should, yeah.
And you're kind of going back to the roots because the story is very similar to the first movie.
Yeah.
So they kind of return to the roots, even in the storytelling of it. So,
yeah,
you know.
And then what they wanted to do was release it after, Jerry Maguire?
Yeah.
They wanted to release it after that to help boost it because of the actors. And that one hey, those actors are also in here. Look at that. And they said no. They were like, no. Like, oh, they halted it because they didn't want Matthew McConaughey to have a bad kind of like reputation.
Yeah.
Or they didn't want it to like...
They didn't want it to tarnish Jerry Maguire.
To tarnish his reputation.
Show me the chainsaw.
Yeah. It was like, yeah. So they were like, no, we are not releasing this. I mean, they missed the mark by like a month, I think is what it was. And unfortunately, they didn't.
Yeah, they weren't able to, you know, kind of ride on the coattails.
But he's still a big star. Yeah. I mean, I don't think Texas Chainsaw would have...
Oh, man, look, you came out with a Lincoln lawyer after that?
Yeah.
I mean, no. It affected McConaughey's, you know, career in no way.
No, in no way, shape, or form. He's fine.
Yeah.
You do get introduced to more of the family and, you know, the mom and stuff like that. So you get, that's when the family's tree starts coming out.
Yeah.
You start seeing more and more of the people, but they're still psychotic. They're still crazy people that will kill you and eat you, cook you up with some barbecue sauce.
Absolutely. Have a chili cook-off. In your face.
And then in 2003, you get the Chainsaw Massacre remake, which I enjoyed. I liked it a lot. I really did enjoy it. You had Jessica Biel as Aaron and Andrew. Oh, my gosh, dude, his last name. I don't know how to pronounce it, so forgive me. And everybody who's listening. Andrew Bierniowski. Something like that. Bierniowski. Bierniowski. Yeah.
Yeah.
He plays Leatherface. And this one had a budget of over $9 million, and it grossed $107 million worldwide. So it did pretty darn good.
Yeah.
If you ask me. And this one was good. It had that kind of grimy kind of dirt. Well, a lot of the movies did that at that time. But it kind of, that's what helped it, like, you know, kind of like the roots of it.
Yeah, it was like it was shot as though it was like, you know, it was kind of Blair Witch-ish in the fact that it was shot kind of like a guerrilla film.
Yeah.
But it had quality production.
Yes. It looked really good.
Yeah.
And even though as grimy as it looked, it still looked really, really good. And yeah, it, that one did well. And it also probably did well. It was directed by Marcus Nispel and produced by Michael Bay,
Yeah.
And Mike Fleece. So you have a pretty good, you know, producer. So that's probably why it looked
you
great.
Have money.
Yes, you got money behind it. That's probably, yeah, that's what it is.
It's absolutely, yeah, yeah. You have the money. Everything was shot very clear. A lot of the movies that were in the franchise were very poorly shot. A lot of dark sequences, a lot of like hazy shadow play, I guess I'd call it.
Yeah.
So this one.
The practical effects, absolutely, you know. Yeah, yeah. So. But yeah, this one, yeah, was way better. It was probably one of the better installments. And you actually got to see his face for the first time. And yeah, that's what was great about it. You know, it had like some of the roots, and I think that's what was good about everything. And of course, you had the girl blow out her head in the van. So
yeah,
that was such a wild, wild, wild event. But
Which Franklin should have done in the first one. Would have made the movie far superior.
Dude, he's so whiny in that first one. Man. I mean, he dies in the first one, but dude, he just so, yeah.
But why? Why did he make it so long?
Dude. What's sad, though, is like he's in a wheelchair.
They don't have the keys. They took the keys.
Nah, man. Come on, Franklin. You'll have so much fun. He's like crying in the house.
Where's the swimming hole, Franklin?
It's right there.
If I have any more fun, I don't think I could take it.
I like the head cheese. I like the head cheese.
Oh, that's gross.
It's good, right?
For anybody who doesn't know what head cheese is, it is literally like just the parts of the cow, all the head of the cow.
Except for the tongue,
and they put it into a mash of just fat and just the meats and stuff like that. Yeah. And it comes into this like loaf
kind of. Yeah, like a gelatinous loaf.
Like a gelatinous loaf, and you slice it up, and that's how you eat it. You don't eat it with anything else. You eat it just like that, and it sounds disgusting. I don't know anybody who's eaten it. I've heard of it, of course, but I've never met somebody who's eaten it. Or maybe they have, and they just didn't tell me. They were ashamed
to
tell me.
Yeah, exactly. You head cheese shamed everyone.
Sponsored by Jell-O. Yeah, it's just, it's gross. It looks gross. It looks like fruitcake, but for meat.
Yeah.
Pretty much. It looks.
I've seen it before. Like, I've seen it at, like, delicatessens and stuff.
They have it, yeah.
Yeah.
Do they still have it? Do they still carry it?
Oh, there are places that still make it.
It probably tastes good. I'm just like, it sounds gross. It probably tastes better than it
sounds. They probably sell it at Bucky's. I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah. Probably sell it at Bucky's. Yeah. Bucky's.
Brisket with head cheese.
Gross. And then after this, you would get, because, you know, now you have a reboot. So now it's time to franchise it up. And so you get. In 2006, they make The Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning, and it wasn't as popular. It pretty much just kind of told the story. It was gonna pretty much start to tell the story of Leatherface again, and it wasn't as great. It was okay.
Well, because by this time, we've had, like, what, four takes on the origin of Leatherface?
Yeah, and so, like, it was time to, like, do it again, and... It just wasn't as great. Didn't come. I mean, it wasn't bad per se, but it just wasn't like.
But the caliber of director, I can't remember who directed this one, but it also, like, you know, they stepped away from throwing so much money at it.
Yeah.
I mean, they might have thrown $9 million at it, but, you know,
no.
It's 4 or 5 years later, you know, $9 million in Hollywood is.
And that was 2006, and, you know, so you had other stuff going on. But then, Eric. You know, back in the 80s, you know, you saw the 3D movement. You saw Jaws and Friday the 13th. You know, they got their 3D. Around 2009, we got My Bloody Valentine to do a 3D one, which was all right. It wasn't too bad. We covered. You can listen to our episode on it. And, you know, there was a bunch of 3D movies. You had Final Destination 4. You had Piranha 3D. You had these 3D movies coming out.
Yeah, the new resurgence of 3D.
Yes.
And
Final Destination, you can do that because the kills, you know. You can have the eyeball poking out with the, you know.
Yeah, like the rebar coming. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
right here. So Texas Chainsaw needs to get a 3D. And there's probably somebody who's going to disagree. There's going to be people out there. I feel like, in my heart of hearts, this is the worst installment of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre franchise.
It's something we didn't need.
You did not need a 3D Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And if you did, the problem with this one is you focus so much on the 3D aspect, you kind of lose the story. And this one is a sequel to the first one. And it is, you know, pretty much tells the story of the Sawyers because you have all the family. And you get one of the, you know, you have Alexandra Daddario. She plays Heather Miller, but she's not a Miller. She was adopted, and she's, sorry to spoil it for you guys who wanted to watch it.
Guess what? She's a Sawyer.
She's a Sawyer. She is a
Sawyer. And it's in the bloodline. It's in the head cheese.
It's in the
chainsaw. Ed Gein.
But this is what's sad is this is the one that Gunnar Hansen returns on. This is one he finally is like, you know what? I'm getting my money.
Okay.
I'm Leatherface.
So we all know this. I mean, I'm not trying to like throw anything out at, you know, Gunnar Hansen, but we all know that I am a complete fiend for anything glow in the dark. Gunnar Hansen's a complete fiend for anything 3D. So he's like, I gotta come back, man. It's 3D. It doesn't matter if it's the like worst written script.
Which... I don't understand why this one was made why you needed a 3D one in the first place. Because in the movie they do so much like overdone, like to do like a 3D, you know, version of this movie, and they didn't need it. You had Leatherface throwing the chainsaw at the camera and stuff like that. I don't even know what else there was. I mean, this movie, the freaking dialogue in this movie was so bad, and you had Trey Songz in it too.
Yeah, that was well,
nothing against him or his music, but I thought we were done with rappers and movies with Halloween. Halloween did that already.
Yeah, I thought Busta Bust and, you know, Rod Digger in 13 Ghosts. I thought we were done.
That's different. That one was pretty good, though. I liked that.
Well, Rod Digger wasn't Rod Digger in that movie, so it was true, okay. Yeah. I mean, she was just like the sassy one, you know? But, yeah.
This one did not have to be made, man. This one... And there's going to be somebody who loves it. Maybe it was their first time seeing it, and they enjoyed it.
Well, I think you could have done it in a minimalistic effort, okay? Friday the 13th, for instance, did it very tastefully.
Yeah, you had...
There were, like, six clips that were 3D.
Yeah.
Now, note, there was a rattlesnake, if you listen to our review. There was a rattlesnake with, like, a piece of string on it, which was
But cheesy. They tried.
They tried. Okay, but it's, like, six instances.
Or Jaws with that fake
Jaws 3, when he comes through and he breaks through the glass, and it's like... Yeah, that was probably the most horrible 3D ever. But once again, there were like maybe two or three scenes in that movie that were 3D.
Yeah.
There was Jaws coming through the glass. That was the most prolific.
Yeah.
But this one, it was like every third minute, it was like some horribly produced 3D.
And then the storyline dialogue was just the worst piece of dialogue in this movie. If you haven't seen it, I would say if you like are feeling down about yourself, go watch this movie.
You're looking at the body of work in your life thus far.
Because there's a piece of dialogue. You have Heather. She's chained up because pretty much she inherited this estate, which is the Sawyer estate. I believe it's the Sawyers, right?
It's the Sawyers.
And she is pretty much getting everything. But she's a Miller, so it's weird, right? But then Leatherface comes out, chains her up, grabs her because, you know, who dare trespasses on my house? Chains her up in an industrial building out of all places and is about to kill her. It's about to chainsaw her up, man. But she has a scar on her chest from a necklace that, you know, had the family crest or this family symbol on it. And it burned into her.
Yeah, she has a rune above her left breast.
Yes, and when Leatherface is about to chainsaw her up, he sees it and he realizes, oh, this is like, you know, this is family. This is my blood. Kin. This is head cheese. What are we doing? And he realizes it, and she realizes, you know, that she's a Sawyer. It's in her blood too. So damn it, she's gonna kill the sheriff with Leatherface. Out of all this time, she was trying to kill Leatherface, and now she switches it up, and she realizes, you know. She's like, oh, I'm your cousin. I'm your family. And then so he unchains her, you know, breaks the chains off of her. You know, the dirty sheriff over there is, you know, he's going to get killed. And he's giving Leatherface the works. You know, he's stretches his ass out. He's getting him. So what does she do? She grabs his chainsaw and slides it to him like, you know, like some weird Bonnie and Clyde shit. Excuse my language, but dude, I hate this piece of dialogue. And she goes, do your thing, cuz. And I'm like, dude, I turned it off right there.
That was the best line ever.
That is the worst.
I got a t-shirt that says that. What are you talking about?
That, dude, it was just so cringy. Because you have, like, just why? Like, why?
Not only that, I can understand that now something in your bloodstream is telling you, this is my family. This is my kin.
Yeah.
How'd you know it was your cousin? It's very descript. I mean, you know. Yeah.
Hey, when you're a Sawyer, you're just family, man. You just know. That's it. You're just
all that time riding in the back of vans with strangers, cutting hands and chili cook-offs. And
yeah. So, yeah, that was probably the worst dialogue in that movie. This movie did not have to be made. But it's made now, and you can now watch it in 3D. if you want to. If you wish to, they do sell a 3D version of it.
Yeah.
But maybe that's what helps it. Maybe that's what, maybe I, because I watched it in 2D.
Oh, come on.
You know, maybe I needed to watch it in
3D. You're denying yourself now.
So shoot. So I need to watch it in 3D. Maybe.
Watch it in 3D. The whole cuz thing, it like pulls you in.
That's
the rune stone. The rune stone tattoo over the Les Breasticus. Oh, dude, yeah.
That is by far the worst dialogue, that worst line in that movie. Maybe I'm making it sound worse. It's cringe. It makes me cringe every time I hear it. Every time I see a scene from it, it's probably the worst. But it's okay because years later, 2017, we get Leatherface, which shows the origins of how Leatherface becomes Leatherface. It's directed by Alexander Bustillo and Julian Mari, if I'm saying that correctly. It is the 8th installment of this Texas Chainsaw franchise and is finally produced by Tobe Hooper. And Kim Henkel. Yeah, Kim Henkel. Who they were the original ones, obviously. Tobe Hooper, the original director, and Kim being the original writer of the Texas Chainsaw. And he, you know, they finally produced this film. This is, unfortunately, sadly, this is the last film that Tobe Hooper produced. But you know what? I don't think it's the worst, you know, it's not the worst way to go out. You gave an origin story to your creation, which was pretty cool.
You're going out with what you came in with. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and it was great. I enjoyed it. I liked it. I saw a lot of mixed reviews looking at the trailer, looking at scenes and stuff like that. It was very mixed. People didn't like the origin, I guess, the origin story, the way it was told, I guess. I think he needed more trauma. You know, you really needed to make him messed up, like, through a lot of trauma. It stars Steven Dorff as the sheriff, as Hal Hartman. He is the sheriff. He's the dirty cop that's trying to track down these kids because they're taken to an orphanage, and they're, you know, this was back in the 60s, and they're getting, like, tested on, and, you know, they had the electric freaking therapy.
Yeah, they got shock therapy and all that, so.
Yeah, and what was cool, though, is they kind of, in the story, you don't know who is becoming Leatherface. So that was cool. You have a...
Yeah, it could have been any of the kids there, so...
Yeah, and that's what's cool is they keep it hidden on who's the actual Sawyer. Is it this kid, or is it this kid? Is it the big hoss, you know, mowing down people, or
whom
is
you're
it,
obviously suspecting, yeah.
That's who I was suspecting, too, yeah. That's who I suspected, and it turns out it wasn't him.
It's like a whodunit, but, you know, who's Leatherface?
Who's Leatherface? Who wants the head cheese? But yeah, it tells a story of how Jedediah, which is Leatherface's name, becomes Leatherface and shows the Sawyer family, minus the father. You do see the father in the beginning. He takes out the sheriff's daughter, and, you know, you just kind of see how they are. And you get to see Chop Top, and before he becomes Chop Top, before he gets his top chopped off. And you get to see, oh my gosh, the other brother. I keep forgetting his name. Nubbins, sorry. I want to say Nimbus for some reason.
He's a cloud. He's a whisper.
Yeah, but Nubbins, yes. Yeah, you see them. They're in the film a good 10 minutes?
Yeah.
10, 12 minutes.
They have, like, brief appearances. They don't go too far into, you know, their origins.
Yeah, but, you know, Leatherface, he was able to talk, and, you know, he was a very... you know, polite teenager he was very violent, but, like, he was kind of outward politely, like, to people until, like, had to get violent, then he was very violent. But he trusted somebody, and they ended up screwing him over, got his best friend killed, who was friends with him in the orphanage, and he gets massacred, or he gets shot in the head, and he realizes, wow, I can't trust anybody. My mom's right. I can't trust anyone. I can't, you know, trust the outside people. The Sawyers are the only ones you can trust. You keep it in the family.
Absolutely. I'm going to go hide out in this house and become a recluse.
Yeah. I just didn't like the whole, he gets shot in the face and he has like a pretty much like a Joker smile, and his mother sews it up and puts this leather mask on him to hold his face together. And that's what he becomes Leatherface. He becomes, yeah. And I liked it. I enjoyed it. He carried kind of the, you know, the walk and the stature a little bit.
I enjoyed this movie like on its own, like on its own merit. I enjoyed it. But
putting it into the franchise, but
putting it into the context, it was like it matches. Even the origin story matches nothing of what you've come to expect.
True.
You know, they're living off the grid. And now it's like, oh, well.
True, now everybody knows them in town.
Yeah, now everybody knows them in town. Because remember, in the original movie, when, you know, Franklin and them go to look for their grandfather's house.
Yeah.
The Sawyers keep asking about the house.
Yeah. They're
like, what house? Oh, your grandpa, your kinfolk used to live. And it makes it seem like they're kind of like nomadic, almost like squatters.
Oh, yeah.
Because they keep asking about the house. Like, what's your granddaddy's house look like? And they're like, oh, well, it's a brick house up on top of the hill.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh. And the Sawyers seem surprised in these descriptions of the house. So, no, they're not integral parts of the community.
No, they're not.
Plus, they've come and they're almost like wandering like a group and, you know, robbing these graves because they were almost 2 hours out.
Yeah.
From the other city geographically when they named the cities. They're 2 hours out.
Now the cops are like right next to them.
Yeah, they're like right there and they're on their, you know, they're on their heels.
Yeah.
And so it made it seem like, yeah, this is all coming together. Now they're all like well defined. They have like this lineage. They have this family tree. And like I said, when you take the story of Leatherface in this movie, it's great if you don't try to compare it to
true, yeah.
What's
you,
come.
Yeah, if you see it, because it's supposed to be, it is supposed to be a prequel.
Yeah.
So.
And he's, he's, not that he's refined, but he's.
He's very well spoken.
So, yeah, so yeah, socially, yeah. He is not inept. He is he's functioning, he's working with society well. Then, I mean, just because you see your family or even like a great friend, even if you see them get killed, doesn't mean you become an introvert.
Yeah.
And you go hide out in the recesses. I mean, good Lord, could you imagine if that happened to Henry Rollins? I mean, seriously, like when Joe Cole got shot in front of him in Hermosa Beach back in the day, Henry Rollins just becomes like some kind of a like nomadic shut-in.
Yeah.
Like
that was the problem, yeah. I think that's the only thing that I had a problem with is that Leatherface is supposed to be kind of this mentally like disturbed person. And that's why he doesn't talk. That's why he doesn't really say anything.
They make it seem like he's like acting out Keats, like in the courtyard, you know, like.
Yeah, but then like you see the origins and it's like, okay, so he's very well spoken. He, you know, he knows what he's talking about. He knows what he's doing. He's not a very disturbed child.
No.
You know, but so.
And this one.
I'm not saying he's not disturbed. I mean, he probably has a lot of trauma, but.
Yeah.
He's not what Leatherface would be. But I did enjoy the film. On its own. I did like it.
I liked how it was shot. It was shot, like, very artistically.
Yeah.
You know, you have a lot of contrast between the original movie was shot where, like, the sun is just beating down on them.
Dude, yeah.
Dude, the sun is just oppressive. It's oppressive the whole time. Even the opening scene I was watching and, you know, how they show the fire burst on the sun. And that's what those red curls are in the opening sequences of the first one.
Yeah.
So nature is just oppressive. Nature is primitive. Nature is punishing you. This one is like, there's sunflowers, there's fields.
Yeah.
Yes, there's, you know, emotionally horrible things going on. But it's shot very well artistically.
Yes.
But it just doesn't relate to, like I said, the oppressive sun. Just everyone in the first one looks uncomfortable. They look like they're just covered
they're
in
all
like
packed down a van.
Dude, there's like six people in a van
sweating.
You've got some annoying chick talking about, you know,
the stars and
the age of Aquarius and crap and the fact that, you know, Saturn's in the house of the rising sun and all this crap. And it's like they keep referencing like the sun.
Yeah, Jupiter's in retrograde.
Man,
and
absolutely.
Stuff like that, yeah.
Even when they go to the cemetery in the first one. Everyone's hot as hell.
Yeah.
They're like passing
dude
out.
Passed
the,
out.
Yeah.
Tired.
He like leans back and there's this like Gork that works at the gas station. And the Gork keeps looking up at the sun because they don't give his name. So I'm just going to call him Gork.
Dude, he doesn't.
No. He has no reason. Dude, he's got like an 8 head. It's just pushed back.
Dude, his head is.
Bro, and he just keeps looking up at the sun because he's like, damn, son, why are you so hot? And then this one comes out and it's like, you know, sunflowers and tambourines and crap. And it's like, you know, like I said, he's all eloquent. And he's like,
and he's in love. And,
yeah. And he's got a best friend. He's got his bestie going. And it's like.
Hey, but I do like how he tore her face off. His love.
Yeah.
Tore her face off.
Like I said, it was,
Or she betrayed him, I guess you could say. Yeah.
I mean, it's great if it wasn't. It
was her fault that he got, that his brother, his best friend got shot.
That his best friend gets killed. Yeah. So, but. Like I said, it was shot well, a story of its own independent nature. It's great.
Yeah.
But when you try and put it in with the franchise, I think this is when, you know, like a lot of these movies did, they lost, you know, the conceptual grasp of what they were trying to get at.
Yeah. Yeah. And in that movie, so in the beginning, the boyfriend, Ted, in the beginning of the film, they don't say his last name, but in the credits, he is Ted Hardesty. So he is kin to Franklin. And... his sister, so
yeah. No one cares about
Sally.
No one cares about Sally.
Well, in this next one, they really care about Sally. So,
well, this is the last one.
This is the last one. The last one that's on Netflix. So, if you haven't seen it, go check it out. It is not bad. I watched it for the first time. I had put it off that I wasn't going to watch it. I'm a little bit of a purist. Okay, I say that, but then I watched Leatherface, so you know. But I was putting it off because I got a lot of, again, with some of these newer movies, you get mixed reviews. You get people telling you it's great, people telling you it's bad. So I put it off for a while. And when we announced that we were going to do this, I was like, okay, fine. It's time for me to check it out. It's time for me to watch this movie. It came out in 2022. It is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, directed by David Blue Garcia. Mark Burnham is the one who plays Leatherface in this one. And this is a lot of not really very known actors and actresses in this one. It's just, you know, these most likely some, this is their feature film. This is what they're, you know, this is what's going to get them.
Yeah,
because
I think it was direct to video. I don't think it was ever released in the theater.
Direct to Netflix.
Pardon me.
You went real far, man.
Hey. Direct to streaming on Netflix. Pardonnez-moi.
Let's go to Blockbuster and rent this movie.
Hell yeah, baby.
But yeah, this one was straight to Netflix. It was filmed in 2020 and then finally got released to Netflix in 2022. It was like changed a bunch of directors and stuff like that. This movie was, at first, I was hating because it's a newer movie, so it has a lot of the new views and elements and stuff like that to it. It's a lot of stuff that I was like, dude, really? Like, come on now. Like, y'all are being, like, the people were, like, so insufferable. You're like, dude. It was kind of like how we did.
Yeah.
I know what you did last summer.
Yeah, it had like social commentary kind of loop, especially after COVID. I mean, you realize it was shot during COVID.
Yeah. So you had these influencers come into this town and are taking over and pretty much going to buy up all the shops, stuff like that. And my thing is like they portray Texans as these redneckery, like, you know.
These cousin humpers.
Screw the environment. Screw you. Screw your views. I got my gun. Like, I'm telling you, you think I'm exaggerating, but if you watch this movie, they portray Texans to be these pieces, POSs that are from the South. And it's like, dude, they're not that bad. I mean, it's like, okay, here's my problem. So there's a scene in this movie. Guy rolls up in a big pickup truck. He rolls up in a Ram 1500. I said that for a reason. He rolls up in a Ram 1500 with these big old freaking exhausts coming out. Not the back, not the bottom. It's coming out the freaking top.
Smokestacks, baby.
He got some smokestacks going on. My problem is he's driving a 2003, because I looked it up. I was like, I know what it is. 2003 Ram 1500. That's specific because he is pumping diesel into a Ram 1500. Now, they had recently, Ram did come out with a diesel engine 1500. It is now discontinued because it was out for like a year.
He upgraded.
He could have. He could have upgraded his engine and changed it, but he would have to change a lot of stuff. And honestly, he'd be better off buying just the diesel vehicle.
But he liked the body of the 1500 in 2003.
My thing is, they're driving down the street after calling this dude like a little, like a shrimp dick asshole, whatever. Because he's, you know, he has this big old loud truck and, you know.
He's compensating.
Yeah.
Like you do.
So they're rolling down the street. He goes and passes them and roll coal on them. Rolling coal is when you rev your engine and you blow the black smoke out of your truck. But you can only roll coal on a diesel. He's driving a Ram 1500 still. You can't roll coal on a gas engine. Even if you did, you might as well just head back to the gas station and refill. Because, dude, you're gonna have to refill after that. So I'm like, dude, really? Like, the writing for this movie was like, dude, I get it. You think people from Texas are these redneck, you know, can't change your view people. I get it. And that's what was like kind of getting me. I'm like, come on, man. Like, I get your message. I understand. You don't like us. That's fine. So that was like bugging me. I was like, come on, man. Like, really? We got to push really hard for this part. Luckily, if you get past that part, it's fine. Like, it's a good movie. It is really good. It's about a girl who pretty much survives a school shooting. I think they were just trying to push like the message of like, hey, guns are bad. Even though you're in a movie about a guy killing people with chainsaws, chainsaws bad.
Exactly. Shut down the Home Depot. Ace Hardware, no more.
That's it. We're done.
That's it.
That's it. No, we're shut down the hardware section of every store here.
You will kill if you buy steel. STIHL people.
Hey, look.
Yeah.
Whatever your feelings are about guns, it's whatever. But I will quote Chop Top Mosley. Dog will hunt. People will kill people, and they will find a way no matter what.
That's what this whole franchise is about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of bothered me about it is, like, you're pushing a, you know, guns are bad, don't shoot, whatever, this and that. But mind you, you're in a movie about somebody killing somebody else with a chainsaw, massacring people, might I add, with a chainsaw, with a freaking tool to cut wood and stuff. But I was like, it's kind of ironic. That's kind of funny. Like, I giggled at that. I was like, really? I was like, come on now. Like, that's pretty funny. But through all that messaging and stuff like that, dude, he played an amazing Leatherface. I mean, his keeper, because now the Sawyer farm is most likely gone. It's done. They're all dead except for him. And he's being, you know, taken care of.
He's been housed. He's on the run.
They kicked this lady who out of her house because they think they own it, these influencers. They find out that, no, they did not own it. They literally kicked this lady out of her house, stressed her out so much she has a heart attack and dies. And because of that, Leatherface is like, no.
You killed my handler.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you're done.
So this is a massacre. Now, this is what I call a massacre. So yeah, he goes off. He breaks the wall like John Wick does in the basement when he's getting, you know, he doesn't want to go back to that life. He breaks he gets his old tools out.
His chainsaw out. Gets
his chainsaw, his freaking, you know,
thing of gold coin so he can stay at the Continental.
The Texas Continental.
Exactly. It's a bunch of chili bouillon cubes, some head cheese.
No, it's the crest. It's the family crest on there.
Oh yeah, on his cuz.
So yeah, it's funny because he breaks the wall like, you know, like John Wick does to get his stuff back because he's going back to that life. And but dude, I mean, I'm telling you, this guy that played him, man, Mark Burnham, I mean, he had the mannerisms, he had the movement just like the first one. It's just like he never went away.
It's like he went to a special ed camp and followed people around. Oh, but wait a minute, this was a politically correct version. He probably didn't do that. He probably just walked around.
Dude, and I'm glad.
San Francisco for a couple weeks.
I'm glad they didn't change it because it was, you know, he kills a bunch of people on the bus. He has like a body count of like 20 something, like over 20 people. And I'm like, dude, this is.
Yeah, he took the murder on the road in this one.
Well, because he's like, he sees all these people moving to his town, you know, a busload of these people who are influencers, stuff like that. So he's
they're
like,
gentrifying the Sawyer farm.
Yeah.
And he's not going to deal with it.
And he's like, dude, like, they pushed my mother, the person who was my mother figure, you know, to have a heart attack. They pushed her out of her house, made her have a heart attack and die. So now it's time to seek revenge. So he starts going. I mean, dude, he cleaves people. He freaking gets on the bus and they all pull out their iPhone, their smartphones. And they're like, hey, man, try anything. You're going to get canceled. He's like, I don't give a shit. Dude, he freaking mows them down, dude. Cuts people in half, cutting their limbs off. I'm like, okay, now I'm bored with this movie. I like it. The only thing I didn't like was they kind of tried to do a Halloween 2018 with it, to have Sally as like this woman who was, you know, trying to look for Leatherface all these years, and now here we are, you know, 50 something years later, and now she gets her, you know, the man that she wants to kill. I was like, it only works with Halloween because you see Jamie Lee Curtis and throughout the whole thing.
She's, yeah.
You know, in
and on top of that, you know from the beginning in Halloween that that's his sister.
Yeah. Not so, from the first one, but from the second one.
Yeah. So you know that that's like, you know, that's the bond.
Yeah. So, yeah. So they have a longer connection. Whereas this one, like, there's been so many interpretations. There's been so many different movies.
On top of that, she was like 20 and this was made like not that long ago. She's going to be like 60 years old just trying to get a body count.
Like. So she was like supposed to be like a game warden or something like that in this one. And, you know, now she's found, you know, the people
who living off the grid.
You know. So I'm like, you know, it doesn't work with this particular character just because of the history. Yeah, she was in the first one and her friends died and her brother died. But other than that, like, you don't really see much of her. Whereas in, like, Halloween, you can do, you know, Laurie Strode like that because, you know, of the history of, and not only that, there's, like, five different timelines of Halloween, so you can do another one. But, you know, you have that history with Jamie Lee Curtis. Whereas this one, you couldn't, unfortunately, use the original actress who played her because she passed away. But, two, it's just, like, it was unnecessary. So she tries to go boss hog on him, and he cuts her in half. Not cuts her in half, but he penetrates her and saws her up pretty good. He kills her pretty good. But I really thought, dude, that they were going to do this whole, like, you know, these two girls make it out. They beat the crap. These two little girls beat up. They're probably, like, in their 20s, but early 20s. But still, like, they're small compared to him. Like, they defeat him. You know, this guy who was, like, dragging people around like they were nothing, you know, these, you know, 6 foot dudes just pulling around like
And the first one, he's lifting girls up and putting them on meat hooks.
Yeah, but like, this is the one. These two little girls are the ones gonna defeat him. And I'm like, come on, dude, this movie had me hooked. And at the end, I'm like, oh, they're gonna do him dirty just like they did Michael. They're gonna do him dirty. I can see it. I can see it coming already. Sure enough, they uppercut him with the chainsaw and he floats him down into the water. And I'm like, dude, that's it. And they're going to leave. They're going to leave in their smart vehicle. So they, you know, put it on route.
Take the charger off.
Yeah. And they put it on route. And as the car is self-driving away, he freaking breaks through the window and cuts the sister's heads off. And I'm like, there we go. That was satisfaction guaranteed right there. What's funny, though, is, like, she's, like, yelling out the window because the car's not going to stop. It's en route. It's, you know, it's a self-driving vehicle. So she's, like, yelling, you know, because, you know, but she could hit the brake. She was like, dude, hit the brake.
It's not like there's no control on a self-driving vehicle.
Yeah, yeah. You can interfere whenever you want to.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I was like, oh, thank God. I was like, he killed one of them.
Yeah. It's not like Jiffy Cab from Demolition Man or whatever it was, or Total Recall. You know, where the little cabbie driver's driving you around.
But. Yeah, but you do get a final girl. She's the last one to make it alive. She watches her sister die, but, you
know. 50 years from now, they'll bring her back, you know.
We have to have, like, a freaking old
Leatherface will be a starved tortoise.
But, yeah, man, the whole franchise, it's got different movies. It's got, at the end of the day, it's, you're going to have your favorites. I have my favorites. I certainly have my hates. I have ones that I, oh my God, 3D was.
Oh, 3D I'll never watch again. Once and done. The last one, I'll probably never watch it ever again.
Yeah, the last one, like I said, it was good. It had its moment. I mean, honestly, I was in it for the fact that he did the dance at the end, like Leatherface, just like in the first one. I was like, dude, this guy needs a raise. Like, dude, get him another part as Leatherface. Or honestly, actually, I would say stop it after this. I don't think we need another. You have to redo the story. You'd have to redo the story or just leave it the way it is and not touch it again, because I think it should end with this movie. It's a good, like, little slice of pie, you know.
Maybe he'll find the sister. They'll have a love tryst. There will be Leatherface's child.
Son of Leatherface.
Then we'll go in. He'll move to Chicago. Dude, think about it, you know.
The Chicago Massacre. The
socio-political commentary is endless. It just, you know, it'll work out that way.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, other than that, like, some of the jabs that they were taking at some of, you know, some of Texans, I'm
But, see, they get their comeuppance, you know. Like, they get sawed up. They get chopped up.
Oh, that's what I loved about it, man. I was like, dude, get them. Get them.
Yeah.
I don't know what that says about me rooting for the killer, but,
Look, I tried to buy him a Ram 1500 diesel.
Diesel.
2003.
Diesel.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was my only thing. It's like, come on, man. At least you couldn't get like a 2500, like a Ram 2500, and at least be somewhat accurate.
No.
Yeah, they couldn't. They really couldn't do it. But yeah, I mean, dude, but from the beginning, I mean, what, we're, what, 52 years later? There's still people discovering it. There's still, you know, they're exploring a very guerrilla style raw movie that still holds up, I think, today. I mean, that's what's so great about this franchise. I mean, who knows where it's going to go now? There's a lot of franchises we're going to talk about. I can't wait to get into them.
Yeah.
Especially the Scream one.
Oh.
But this one in particular, man, it's, I think, one, because you're from we're from Texas. I'm born and raised here.
Yeah, I just live here. But so, yeah, yeah. But like I said, you know, the fact that the first one, I think, was extremely prolific. There's a new documentary coming out here next month, I think.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's got Patton Oswalt. It's called, like, Cutting Scenes or something like that. But yeah, they gave you a snippet of it when you went to go see it. And it looks really good. It's, you know, a bunch of different actors and actresses. And the effects that this movie and this franchise had on society.
Yeah. Yeah, again, it was just a change in, you know, you get your slasher, you know, you chop them up slasher.
It changed everything. It changed cinema. It changed, you know, what you watch on TV.
Yeah.
We didn't have true crime. You know, we didn't have, you know, true TV and all these true crime shows and, you know, 48 documentaries on Charles Manson.
Yeah, or Ted Bundy and stuff like that. Yeah,
you didn't have
that. Well, and that's the thing, too, is at the time, there was all these serial killers coming out, being arrested, and just they're seeing their crimes of what they did. You know, you had, you know, Ed Gein, but you also had Charles Manson.
You had Zodiac.
Yeah, you had the Zodiac Killer. You had Son of Sam. Well, that was maybe a little bit after that.
BTK was after. Night Stalker was after.
Yeah.
But still.
But yeah, you were in an era of where some of these people, like the horrific things they were doing, was no longer a movie. This was now reality, and that's what it just reflected on. Like, hey, man, there's some psychotic people out there that are gonna.
Yeah, because before this, the only place that you got stuff like what you're talking about in Texas Chainsaw were in like little magazines, little true crime fantasy mag. That was it. So you had to like really seek that stuff out because the moral majority, for you know, the most part, wasn't going to be carrying, you know, weird stuff about Ed Gein.
Yeah.
Because at that point, it was like, hey, this is like taboo. We don't talk about stuff like this.
Yeah.
It happens, but, you know, we're not going to explore this.
Yeah, that's why the first movie was so restricted. That's why it got chopped up.
And, yeah.
You know, or they had to chop some of the parts out because, yeah, it was gruesome, you know. Now, I think it would be great. I mean, yes, of course, they have the Netflix one. But I'm just talking about, like, as an original film, you know, had it not been a franchise, had it been made today, just imagine what it could have been. Or maybe what it couldn't have been. I mean, I don't know. It just...
Probably would have come out a lot like the last one, I think, if it were made today. They would have really, you know, politicized it up, you know. Because geographically, you are pigeonholing it.
Yeah.
Texas Chainsaw and for, you know, whatever, you know. You know, you're going to look at certain ways about, okay, Florida man.
Yeah.
Alabama. You're looking at some guy. Every place, you know, Californian. They, you know, 95% of people think all Californians are, you know, Gavin Newsom supporters. No, it's not really that way. And you get that way no matter where you go in the States. So, but yeah, definitely like Texas, I mean, it's its own republic.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think, you know, it does come off and people do throw those connotations of, you know, the Ram 1500.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, don't get me wrong. There are some people with trucks that are so high out of the sky that they're driving with the doves. I mean, dude.
All I got to say about that is, okay, Inland Empire in California, in between Vegas and Riverside County, i.e. 909ers, yeah, they got trucks, okay?
Yeah.
They got trucks put Texans to shame.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like it don't matter where you're from. People in Vegas.
If you live in a rural area, you're going to have.
Even if you don't, you got culture and everything everywhere. True. It's not just distinctly a
cut
Texas
off flannels.
Thing. Absolutely. You know,
mullets.
Canada. You know.
Oh, yeah. Canada.
Big shout out to Snack the Ripper. I mean, you showed us a lot of things. So, yeah, everybody's got that, you know.
Yes.
Everybody's got that backwoods lifestyle. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah, it's a lifestyle. That's what it is. Yeah. At least be accurate with a vehicle. Come on now.
Yeah.
you know, put them in a freaking, yeah. I mean, I like that it was a Ram. It was a very nice truck, but.
I like to buy that truck.
I like to buy that truck right now, actually. But yeah, dude, this franchise, I mean, it's going to hold up even 25, 50 years from now. It's still going to be, as long as there's, you know, crazy people in the world, these movies
are. As long as you have rural areas, you're going to have this whole storyline is just going to continue to perpetuate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's the unknown is what it was. And and just like horrific things. I mean, that's what fascinates people. That's why you have true crime podcasts, because crazy stuff is interesting and it draws people's attention. So yeah, you're going
to
have.
And on top of that, being raised in a city.
Yeah.
Not knowing what it's like to be living in a town, like you said, with 600 people.
Yeah.
Like you got backwoods situations and it's fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
And that's always been a pull, no matter what franchise it is the fear of the unknown. Yeah. So
yeah. If you haven't seen the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, start with the first one and you can work your way up or just pick and choose which one you like. I mean, but I would say, well, you got to watch the first one before you watch any of the other ones. This is a good franchise. And then we'll talk about more franchises and stuff like that, news and in horror that's going on. I mean,
because Dame can't wait to get on Scream. He's
I can wait on that one. I have my own opinions on that one. And, you know, people are going to disagree, and that's what I like. I mean, what do you – let us know what was your favorite Texas Chainsaw movie.
Yeah,
what was
you...
the one that you hated that you just – they did not need to make a 3D.
Hint, hint.
But yeah, guys, thank y'all so much for listening. That was us talking about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre franchise. We appreciate y'all listening. Please spread the word of Petrified Podcast to anyone and everyone who loves horror and spooky stuff and stuff like that. If you want to hear two guys rant about horror movies and other spooky things that happen in the world, you know, let them know that we're here. You know, continue to rate us, review us if you haven't, 5 stars if you think that we're worthy of it. And drop a line wherever you can to let us know what you think about us and what you think about these movies, what's your favorite, what's your, you know, most hated.
Yeah, if you want to hear, you know, a different franchise.
Yeah, let us know what you want to hear. We are here to cater to you. We love doing this, but we also love doing it for y'all. So please let us know what you want to hear us talk about. Thank y'all so much for listening, and we will see y'all
next week.